You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams. In this episode, we take a look at some meta horror with a discussion on the films New Nightmare and Scream 4. Here to discuss the films with me is a woman who brought this theme to me. It is returning guest, Regina Kim.
Hi, Eric. Good to be back.
Yes, it's good to have you back. So before we get into our discussion, I would like to mention that we are still proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Search Deliberate Noise in your podcast app for more great shows from the network. We are also available over at Spotify. So if you haven't checked us out over there, you can definitely follow us over at Spotify. Regina, what is it that you are having to drink?
Tonight, I have a whiskey sour. It's been my pandemic drink over the past maybe 6 months. I've really perfected it to my liking.
Okay.
So that is what I'm having. What are you having here?
Well, what sort of whiskey do you usually go with?
So I go with a Kentucky bourbon.
Oh, okay.
And no, I don't do the, no. So Trader Joe's has a really good one, and that's the one I've been using recently. And it goes really well with all the other ingredients, but I don't do the egg whites. I don't do anything else. Like, I know some people like to put cherries in it and stuff, but I just go, you know, very basic three ingredient whiskey sour.
I like it. That is a mutual friend of ours, Miss Ariel Relaford. That's one of her drinks.
Oh, really?
That she likes. Yeah. She likes herself an old fashioned. That's something that you guys can bring up. What I am having is another one of her drinks, actually. It is a specialty. So this is the Ariel show. It's like the bartender
Ariel Relaford.
That's right. But I am having just a margarita, just a plain old margarita.
Okay.
It is one that my wife is having a friend over, and I don't know where they got it or who made it or if they picked it up on the way or what, because you're still in Nebraska. We are still doing those pick it up on the way sort of things. So I don't know. They just said, you want a margarita? And I said, absolutely. So
nice.
So that's what I'm having. It's got a nice little tahine rim and everything. So it's got the salted rim, and you know, it's as fancy as we get over here.
You're doing it right. Yeah.
That's right. Awesome. All right. So that's what we are drinking. Those are the movies we are talking about. We're going to go chronologically. So we're starting in 1994 with Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
I'm doing a film about my nightmares as I'm dreaming them. In order for the movie to continue, it was dependent on me having more nightmares. Well, fortunately, I did.
I'm a little frightened by what Wes may have tapped into. I frankly felt that it was over when we did the final nightmare.
In a town where movies go over schedule and directors go over budget, something far more evil is out of control.
Suffered its own terror today as two of Hollywood's best-known special effects technicians were found dead.
Part of the theme of the movie is becoming like part of the making of the movie.
Can you come with me in my dreams?
I think that only happens in the movies.
What happens when the story dies, the evil is set free. Now that the films have ended, the genie's out of the bottle. That's what the nightmares are telling me, and that's what I'm writing.
This is still a script we're talking about, right, Wes?
You've decided to cross over out of films into our reality.
The only way to stop them is to make another movie.
Oh, my God.
The bad man's getting awful close.
You're going to have to make a choice.
Choice.
Whether or not you're willing to play Nancy one last time.
No!
Mommy!
Cut the effect!
Isn't there somebody who can stop him?
That person's you.
Why me?
But it was you that gave Nancy her strength.
Nancy.
Where's my son?
And the IMDb plot synopsis is a doozy, and it goes like this. Heather Langenkamp is trying to put her nerves back together after a stalker disrupted the lives of her, her husband, and her child, Dylan. Meanwhile, an ominous force has chosen the personhood of Freddy Krueger as its ticket into the real world. Suddenly, Heather's husband turns up dead, as does his crew working on a mechanical glove for a new Elm Street movie, and Dylan starts complaining about a man with knives for fingers that is warded off by his T-Rex doll. Calls to Robert Englund and Wes Craven reveal something is definitely wrong. After a visit to Wes, Heather begins to realize the only way to save her son and stop this evil force from coming into the real world is to play the role of Nancy Thompson one last time in an attempt to trap this demonic force in the stories of Elm Street once and for all. Regina, before we get into the film, what is it that attracts you about Metahorror?
Yeah, first of all, that is a long synopsis on IMDb. That, I mean, they just gave away the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought this up to you, Eric, because in October, I was doing sort of all the rewatches of the classic horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was watching them, so many of them, you know, because I know the tropes already, right? Like, I'm a fan of this genre. I'm a fan of slashers. And so many of them, I'm just like screaming at them, even though I already know what's going to happen. Like, stop running or don't go behind that door, or like, you know, and I'm yelling at them. And I remember thinking, you know, like, what Metahorror does well is to be able to, you know, be self-aware and be self-reflexive, self-referential. And I remember the first time I watched Scream and being able to pick up on that, even as, you know, like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And it just brought all that back to me. And the way that Scream was able to kind of be self-aware in that way made me want to re-examine meta-horror as a subgenre of the horror genre. And so that is sort of my personal interest in this genre, and which is why I brought it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that Scream really redefined the horror genre. It really just deconstructed that slasher movie in a way that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, because what were we doing in the 90s? We were sort of past peak slashers. I mean, we had like some Child's Play probably still going on in the early mm-hmm. 90s. But other than that, weren't we entering like teen horror with I Know What You Did Last Summer and...
Yeah.
Oh, like that kind of thing before Scream?
Yes, we were. And, you know, I grew up with a lot of reboots and sequels.
Oh, yeah.
Like the really bad sequels. And so for me, in a way, horror was synonymous with that. You know, like it was just year after year, I would go to the theater and I would see another bad sequel. But for some reason, I was drawn to them. And then, you know, we hit all the reboots, right? We hit the Nightmare reboot, we hit the Friday the 13th reboot.
Yeah,
in the mid 2000s, was it?
Yeah, and we had Rob Zombie's Halloween stuff.
Right. That was also
when we had the sort of rise of sort of trying to adapt J horror stuff with the Grudge and the Ring.
Yeah, so there was a lot of just like remakes, I think, and especially with J-horror and American remakes, and me really going back to see the originals changed the way I viewed horror, really.
Hmm. All right, so getting into New Nightmare itself. So this is coming off of your beloved Freddy's Dead.
Oh my god, we don't need to bring this up.
And this is sort of the Wes Craven, almost like a dry run for Scream, right?
Absolutely.
Because he's doing it 2 years before. He obviously doesn't have Kevin Williamson. And that script hasn't been, you know, legendarily sort of was on the how high can you bid for this thing. But that hadn't happened yet. So this is Wes. What's kind of interesting about this is if you look at the IMDb for this film, it says writer Wes Craven, and then it just says characters in parentheses, which is kind of a, it's like an odd, it's just kind of an odd label, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why it doesn't just say written and directed by Wes Craven, but normally the characters is when it's a sequel and you don't have anything to do with it. Yeah. You just created the characters. So I don't know. Oh. So that was just like a weird thing that I noticed. But when did you first come upon New Nightmare, and what did you think of it this time around watching it?
Yeah, I came across this actually after I'd seen the Scream movie. So it was really interesting to like go back and then knowing my own personal journey with it. And I totally agree with you. I think that this movie is almost a precursor to Scream, because it dissected the genre that was perfected in Scream. Mm-hmm. And so I see a lot of the foundations that are established here in this movie. But like I said, I watched, you know, the first Scream when I was young. I didn't know at that time what it really was, because I hadn't seen a lot of the original stuff that it was sort of dissecting.
Yeah. You didn't have the history. Yeah.
No, not at all. And because I was so young too, and I know we'll talk about it a little bit later, but I saw Scream 4 is the only one I've seen in theaters too. Mm-hmm. So that was a very different experience. But after seeing Scream 4 is when I started to do all the, the originals of all the other slashers. And that's when I came across this one, because I did, you know, all the marathons of all the other ones. And I loved this one. I loved it because it did something very different than I've seen in all the other nightmares, but, you know, across the board as well. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that this one was talking more about sort of the horror movie industry versus horror as a genre, which Scream 4 does a lot, and all the Scream ones. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting just to see, you know, the commentary on the industry, the business, and how much Freddy has taken over pop culture at that time.
Right.
And then to be able to critique that and kind of analyze that in Wes's own way was a really cool experience watching it for the first time.
Yeah. So since I'm much older than you, my history is slightly different. So I watched this right when this came out on, it had to have been VHS at the time. And I was still in high school by this time. So I would be willing to bet that I rented this, and either I did or my mother did, because we used to both rent them. And then I would watch a horror movie every Friday when I would babysit my sister while my parents both worked. And I remember seeing the cover to this. I wasn't clued in enough to know that it was coming or anything like that, but I remembered seeing the cover, and it's, you know, Robert Englund, but he doesn't have any kind of like silly, what seemed to me like silly sort of painting. It was like, oh, wait, they're going to do this as if it's like a serious thing, like a real thing. I still don't love the look of the mechanical glove that's on the cover. It's just always scarier to me when it's just like a dude, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I remember later seeing the previews for this, or maybe on a different horror deal, to where I knew that it was coming up and knew to look for it. But when I got it, I was like, whoa, this is how movies are made. Like, I had no idea at the time. Like, I was a high schooler, but I had no concept. You know, a high schooler in Nebraska doesn't have any sort of run in with Hollywood. Right. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of crazy. They just call people up and they're like, oh, hey, come do this. And you know, because it was like the talk show part specifically, to where I was like, wait a minute, they didn't script all this? Holy cow. You know. And so I remembered watching that, and then I remember going and seeing Scream and having not a clue really who Wes Craven still was. Like, I knew that he was the guy that created A Nightmare on Elm Street, but then when they were talking about Wes Craven and Scream, I was like, oh, big deal. Like, I don't know what significance that is. Mm-hmm. And seeing Scream, and of course being shocked at Drew Barrymore at the beginning, and so on and so forth in that movie. But so I remember liking this a lot. I had seen it maybe twice since I first saw it. And so going into it this time, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. It's where I distinctly remember the guy falling asleep moment. And I remember most of like the first half, I would say, I remembered. And so I go into this to it this time, and I've got my notes here, and I've got about, oh yeah, I put 55 minutes in, like, how the hell does this still have an hour left? Because I was right. Like, wait a minute, I'm running out of stuff that I remember. Like, how is this still going? Like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. And that was some of the real differences that you could feel between this and Scream, to where Scream, you know, obviously they don't have people playing themselves. So the acting level,
yeah,
you know, is a little bit different when you have actual actors compared to like Bob Shea or something, right. trying to carry scenes, or even Wes Craven. I mean, you're like, oh boy, okay, this just looks like a behind the scenes kind of thing instead of a character. But yeah, so what did you think of it this time around watching it again?
I mean, I still love it. This has got to be my second favorite nightmare after the original.
Okay.
And this time around, it was cool because I had seen that the original Nightmare only a couple weeks ago. So being able to kind of compare the two was really cool because there were a lot of similarities. There were callbacks to the original. There was a very similar opening to the original. You know, the babysitter getting dragged across the ceiling.
The steps later.
Right, exactly. So it was really cool to watch it almost right after I'd watched the original again. And, you know, specifically, the reason I brought this theme up to you was because I wanted to compare New Nightmare, which is a meta horror movie from the 90s, to something like a Scream 4, which happened in, you know, 2011. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see the differences and similarities of the two movies, if anything changed dramatically, whether, you know, technology plays a bigger role in Scream 4, which we can get into when we get to that movie. And that was what I was really curious about. You know, even like something like that new Chucky, right? Like in 2019, they brought in technology to make it upgraded and more accessible, I guess, to the modern audience.
Oh, right. With the USB and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right. So I was curious just to see how New Nightmare, being from the 90s, would be different or similar to something like a Scream 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. Because and we'll talk about sort of what I really like about what Scream 4 does and what I think are some sort of like self-conscious decisions that don't work so well. Mm-hmm. One of the things here that, we need to talk about is Miko Hughes as Dylan. The cute little boy from Pet Sematary is how I always remember Gage Creed. And I honestly forgot that he was in it until I saw him and I was like, oh man, that's right. And so, boy, my second note was, Dylan, reel it in, buddy. Like, holy cow, is he just chewing it up. Like, he is just so over the top in some of these moments. And some of it is fun, but some of it, he's like, you know, the movie, they keep playing the original. The original keeps coming on, right? And the movie will be turned off. Heather will turn it off, and then he'll just scream. And I'm like, that happened like
three or four times. It happened a lot.
Yeah. And I was like, wow. So some of it was a weird sort of tone to me, because at times he's very sort of over the top and campy. And then at times, so is Freddie, because they talk about how they really pulled back on the jokes and they do pull back on the jokes. But then there's still times where, you know, whether it's like the tongue at the end, or it's like Cloud Freddy at one point, to where there's still some sort of like sillier Freddy type things.
Right.
And so it is like, I think of the major slasher 80s sort of characters, I think this one is the hardest to do, because Freddy has become such an iconic villain, to where it's his persona and it's Robert Englund's way that he plays them, to where when they had Jackie Earle Haley and they tried doing almost fully serious without very many quips, it just felt so much dirtier and it just felt so much harsher, to where I was like, well, this is not what people remember of this franchise. And that wasn't a very good film. I don't like saying, but that wasn't my favorite. attempt. But so I think it's really, really hard to do a Nightmare on Elm Street movie where you have to really swing wildly in tone. And I don't know that Miko Hughes was super good in this for me, because he's all over. We'll talk about the moment with Julie in the with Rex, but yeah, that was my first sort of thing that really kind of stuck out. I really think Heather Langenkamp can sort of do no wrong for me, because she was sort of it wasn't Jamie Lee Curtis. It was Heather Langenkamp for me as I was growing up. My first of these that I ever watched was the second, was the sequel. And I was, that probably came out in like 85, 86, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I was much too young to see it. And I remember having it forced upon me basically by my cousins, and being at a cousin's house, and they're like, "Hey, we're watching this." And I was like, "I don't think so." And they're like, "Nope, we're doing it." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I distinctly remember like the school bus scene, and not really knowing the sort of sexuality play that's on hand in the second movie. Mm-hmm. But really being struck by a lot of the visuals in that film, and then being curious about it. And a couple of years later, watching the first one and the third one, and really sort of liking what Heather was all about, or what Nancy was all about, but Heather Langenkamp was all about.
Right.
And she just is sort of like, not that Jamie Lee Curtis I dismiss because she's had such a good career, but it's sort of like, this is Heather Langenkamp's thing. And so I always sort of have like a soft spot for her in particular, because it's like, no, she didn't go and make True Lies or A Fish Called Wanda or something that's like super popular and successful. Like, this is it for her. So I really like her, and she can kind of, you know, she could have some interesting line readings, and it doesn't bother me a bit because of who she is, I think.
Right. And it was also interesting watching it this time around, because, you know, I saw a lot of commentary in this, right? Like social commentary of, you know, I mentioned it before, but just like how the horror movie industry runs and what they expect you to do as a writer director and what they expect you to do as the star of this really popular franchise. And, you know, like we can talk about Freddy in a little bit, and how, you know, I feel like a lot of what this was saying was how his fame and how he's taken over everything in pop culture has sort of stripped him of his fear factor in a way. Mm-hmm. And again, I could talk more in detail a little bit later about that, because I did think he was a lot darker in this one, which surprised me when I first watched it. But then if you talk about Heather, right? I saw this a lot of as maybe there are parallels to her own life, like, you know, the real Heather's life, where, you know, stalkers and people calling her and people being really creepy, and just like what that entails and what it means to be the star of this really, really popular horror franchise.
Yeah. Well, and so the thing, sorry to interrupt you, the thing that I thought was really interesting about that specific line that you just said about her sort of not wanting the stalker, right? Obviously. But I just think that it's so interesting comparing our second film to this, to where they're the central person, for people that haven't maybe seen it yet, I'll wait to spoil who it is, but the central person is desperate for the attention, desperately wants to be in the spotlight, to where here Heather's kind of like, you know what? I'm good. I don't need to do this anymore. I'm overdoing this. Like, I obviously don't want this stalker that's terrorizing our home, but I'm just kind of, I'm not real interested in coming back to the franchise. And so I really like that. I thought that this must be happening with you currently, Regina, with the, we've got Robert's back, Heather Langenkamp's back, the producer's ready to go, the studio's sold it. How's Wes doing? Oh, you know, he hasn't finished the script yet. It's coming. But he hasn't done it. Oh, well, everyone else is in already. It's already greenlit. We're already ready to roll, but the script's not done.
Right. And the pressure, right? Like, I'm sure he, both in the movie and when he was writing it, just the pressure of having to deliver something that could kind of transcend the other ones. And you know, there was a line, I don't remember exactly what it was, but there was something Wes in the movie said, which I laughed at because it almost felt like he was throwing shade at the other Nightmare sequels. You know, I think it was like when they were at his house and he was like explaining that. I don't remember the line, but it was just so funny. And I laughed out loud and I was, cause you know, he wasn't involved in any of the other ones except like the first one. And then this one, I believe.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, it was just funny to even have little quips like that in there coming from the writer director.
Yeah, that's true. So let's talk about Robert Englund as Freddy. He's got a little bit of a different look this time around. Like I had mentioned, this was not the look that I know that this is closer to what Wes Craven had intended, is what the trivia says.
Right.
I sort of don't love it because it's like it's a little bit more polished. And that's kind of the thing that I didn't like about it. Like, that's what I think the first one does so well, is it kind of looks cheap and grimy and it's dark and you can't see everything. And here it's like, you can see his face and he's got like this strip of skin that looks sort of like corduroy or something. And I'm like, well, that looks fake as hell. Like, I don't like that one bit.
Yeah. Or
it doesn't look as like, it doesn't look as much to me like a burn victim. It's just kind of like a weird texture on his head or something. And then, like I said, I don't love the robot hand. I did write in my notes here that I love that in Heather's initial dream that her husband's creations doesn't work for shit. It's like she's dreaming and her husband's husband's life work doesn't work for anything. So I thought that was funny. But one of the things that I think that I probably my favorite scene in the film is when Robert Englund is talking to Heather and they're talking about meeting up. And that was a very sort of industry thing that I liked, where she's wanting to meet up right away. And he's like, oh yeah, tomorrow. And then tomorrow never comes, right? They never end up meeting up. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a, hey, we'll talk tomorrow about this project. And then, oh yeah, get in touch with me next week. Oh yeah, get in touch with me next month. But I like how he is painting and he has the painting and it's sort of Freddy, but it's not exactly like a replica of Freddy. But then what I thought was strange is I love that scene and I love the way that that ends. And then he's just gone from the movie. And I thought that that was so odd because, you know, she gets his voicemail later.
Or his
answering machine, I guess. But then you don't see him anymore. And I was like, what? I could have swore in my memory that we had a scene where he like becomes Freddy or something, but I guess not.
Oh, interesting. You know, I read the script for this maybe like 2 years ago. And there is actually a scene in the script where Robert is explaining that he's gonna like get away for the weekend or something like that, where he's saying like, I'm gonna take my wife, this is getting too much, we're gonna go away. And they didn't film that, or maybe they cut it or something, but in the script I was like, oh, that is why he's gone. So when I watched it this time, you know, knowing that, it made sense to me.
It was so strange because it's like, well, here's like the perfect sort of sympathetic villain, because like he seems like a very cool, normal kind of guy. And then you just make Freddy sort of come out and he's Freddy in the real world. I was like, how easy is that? Like, that seems like just such an easy sort of choice. And instead he just disappeared. And I was like, okay, well, whatever.
So I hear what you're saying and I disagree. Loved this new Freddy. And I think it's because this is the one that actually scared me. So again, we're, you know, we have very different timelines of how we've watched this, and I'm not trying to call you old or anything. I'm old
very
too.
Used to it, Regina. I'm very used to it.
But because I'd watched the original, you know, as an older person, you know, not as like a kid and not as like a preteen, I think that has something to do with it, because I wasn't as scared of Freddy as in the original. At that point, he had taken over so much of our culture that I knew exactly what he looked like. I knew how he talked. I knew his jokes. And so by the time I watched that one, I was like, oh yeah, that's the dude, you know, we've seen him before. So when they upgraded him for New Nightmare, like I said, he felt darker than he'd ever been before. The new upgraded glove for me worked because it was almost like a reflection of the changing times and how much technology has changed. And just the fact that there, I mean, it helped that there were no, you know, I guess fewer jokes is what I'd have to say, where, you know, in all the sequels, he's just doing these like one-liners as jokes and they're funny, but it took a lot of the fear factor away from him as a character for me watching all those sequels sort of back to back. But then when I got to this one, yeah, there was just something about the upgraded look, the upgraded darker tone to him, the one that's like, I don't know, he seemed bigger too. I don't know if that was just me. He seemed taller. He seemed like a bigger than life figure as well. And just the way that they played up his introduction into the real world was a lot scarier for me, and the suspense that they built around that. So I thought it worked.
What did you think about bringing sort of like the whole California and earthquake and sort of everything falling apart around this sort of like Freddy's coming and he's like destroying part of the real world as he's sort of breaking into our world? What did you think of that? Was that like because I'm trying to think, like, that was something for me that could have been pushed harder, I guess. But I didn't know if that was because I'm in Nebraska and earthquakes are just like so foreign to me. I don't even know what I would do. You know, I'm like, oh, bring me a tornado. Tornado's scary for me. Earthquake. Oh, I was like, I don't know anything about an earthquake.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Well, speaking as a native Californian, it worked for me. You know, I understood it because he's the character of Freddy is breaking into our real world, right? It's someone from the fictional world having to penetrate our, you know, this layer into our world. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe there could have been other ways to do it. I totally bought it, the earthquake thing. And just the fact that there's so many just like back to back to back and no one can kind of explain why they're happening. And at a certain point, I feel like it was only Heather who started to experience the earthquakes too, right? Like when she goes back. Oh, right.
Yeah. After a while it is. Yeah.
And when she goes back to the hospital, she's like, there was that earthquake. And the doctor's like, what are you talking about? There was no earthquake. And so I thought that was really cool because then you're starting to wonder whether she's just hallucinating things. If these things are just localized to her home or her room, because she's so tied to Freddy as characters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just makes you think about all these things in a different way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm curious, you know, what are your thoughts about that? Like you said, you're from Nebraska, so earthquakes are very foreign to you.
Right. That's right. Well, I mean, I was very into knowing what earthquakes were in the late 80s, watching the World Series get shut down for a day.
Yeah.
You know, I was in peak baseball, traveling baseball at the time. And so I was like very clued into everybody that was on every team. It felt like, looking back, I wouldn't have been able to name everyone, but I'm like, oh, okay. This whole World Series, this Bay World Series.
Yeah.
I was like, I know all these dudes. Like I batted left-handed. So I was a big Will Clark guy because the Giants were on TV all the time. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch all of this. And then there was the earthquake and I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, holy cow. So
yeah, because I was like, wasn't it like the first time or something that an earthquake was captured live on live TV? It was something like that.
It was definitely the first time a sporting event had been interrupted.
Oh, okay, good. And one of my best friend's mom was at that game because I believe that was when it was in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, she would always tell us that, yeah, they had to shut everything down. They had to evacuate and everything. And that earthquake is also, so my dad had driven over the Bay Bridge just like 5 minutes before that earthquake hit.
Oh, wow.
So, and for those of you who don't know, the Bay Bridge collapsed. At that point, they had two decks and the upper deck had collapsed onto the lower deck. Mm-hmm. And So, I wasn't born at that point, but I always wonder, you know, if he had just driven over it like 5 minutes later, if I'd be here today.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So there's some context in terms of our ages. I was watching it on TV and Regina was a dream in her father's eye.
Yeah, I was just not anywhere in this universe yet.
So that's why maybe the earthquake stuff, I really like the idea where it does transition into, is this just all in her head or is it really happening and all that kind of thing? Because I think the whole like psychedelic, like what's reality, what's a dream, what's happening, what's not, like that's the highlight for me and of all of the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff is going into that sort of thing, because that's, you know, that's where it separates itself from being just one of any number of other slasher sort of movies. So I want to talk about Julie, and I want to talk about poor Julie's death scene. Mm-hmm. In the hospital. So we have the doctor character that you mentioned. It is the woman that played Sam Jackson's mother in Unbreakable. Is where I knew her from. Oh, I was like, God, this voice sounds so familiar.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so that's who that is, because she's got that very sort of wise woman sort of voice. So we have the babysitter who got introduced as introducing Tracy Middendorf as Julie, which was, you know, they only usually reserved for someone that they thought was really going to pop out of a franchise. But we get that moment and I'm like, oh shit, we got Freddy and he's got this green hat. He's looking real sort of dangerous. And it was a moment where I was really expecting a lot as a 2021 viewer. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I remember this. This is when he drags her up like the first movie. And we had the kid there, blah, blah, blah. And this time it seemed like it went on for longer than I expected it to, because he kind of like makes a couple of quips and then he drags her and he's sort of slowly dragging her. And one of the things that I thought was weird was I felt like it was sort of playing with what Dylan could see and sort of playing with what Dylan, like the reality versus what he sees. But also I didn't know if it was a filmmaking mistake, because the amount of blood changed a lot. Like as she's getting dragged up, like sometimes she's really bloody and the wall's really bloody. And then sometimes it's really clean looking. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like, is this a thing or is this just a mistake? Like, I guess I can't tell.
Right. Like if it was meant to be like that, or if it was just like a continuity thing.
Right. So that's what I couldn't quite figure out. And we get I think England is really good in that spot. I think, you know, all that Tracy Middendorf is doing is she has her help me thing and she's looking very upset, like you would guess. But man, Miko Hughes in that moment is brutal for me. I don't like, I put Rex in all caps and then I did a little upset face in my notes. And I just think that, so he has his like trembling lip kind of moment. And then he also has the like turn to nobody and scream Rex. And I was like, what is this?
Is that when you messaged me?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause that's when I just got a message and it just said Rex in all capital. And I was like, okay.
Well, cause so I couldn't even tell what it was at first. Cause I was like, what is he even saying?
Yeah.
And so I went back and put the subtitles on. I was like, oh, he is calling for the dinosaur.
Okay. Yeah. I remember watching this time around. I was like, I get he wants his dinosaur, but I don't know. I guess my first thought, if I were that age, I would like call out mom. Or
yeah,
something.
Mom. Exactly. Cause I was like, is he saying mom like really oddly? Like, what is going on here? Because he's not, I knew he wasn't saying Heather because it was only one syllable, but I was like, what is he saying? What are you saying? So I don't know. I was like, man, I really liked him a lot better in Pet Sematary because he didn't have a whole lot of lines and he definitely looked very creepy, which, you know, he works well in that movie here. He's got a really tough job as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like how many different ways can you tell a kid to ask? To act terrified and scream and foam at the mouth and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
So he's got a lot. So he's got a, you know, he's got a lot of hard work ahead of him. But man, I thought at times that was tough.
Right.
I did think from that point on is where it got a little out of the meta and a little more into sort of what the sequels do. To where she goes back basically being Nancy again. Mm-hmm. And goes to sort of his lair, and we have a little bit of Nightmare 3 where they had met and she gets killed, to where, you know, it looks sort of that way, and we have the, you know, kind of more typical Final Girl type stuff.
Right.
But I think that's all done well and it's a lot of fun. But I was more interested in the first half that I remembered better, where it was a little bit more like, here's how the film industry works and here's Freddy coming into the real world and all that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I thought that switch into, okay, now we're actually back in the nightmare world was really cool. And it's that scene where she goes back to the house after, you know, chasing him onto the highway and somehow not dying, either of them, which is ridiculous.
That's where we get that cloud Freddy that's a little shaky looking too.
And then there was also that scene where like thousands of Freddy show up behind that fence. And
yeah, that was what kind was of that?
Terrifying. Yeah, I was actually kind of scared. If I saw like 100 Freddies right there, I would just, you know,
Regina, if I see 100 anything, I'd be like, ooh, get me out of, no, I don't like this. 100 of any of the same things? No, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, so she makes it back home, finds Dylan there, and then John Saxon comes and is like, what are you doing?
Oh, right.
He's over here. He's all good. You're all good. And then they're like walking out and he calls her Nancy. And she's like, why are you calling me Nancy, John? Yeah,
why are you calling Nancy John?
Yeah. Yeah. Like very pronounced John. And it's like, you got to call Robert. Who's like, who's Robert? You know, the guy who played Freddy. And I thought that switch into that world was cool, where like she's starting to come into that realization as well. And then sees the badge. It's like, oh, that's, you know, that's my dad in the film. Like he's the cop again. And then accepting it, you know, having to finally embrace it. And like Wes said earlier in their conversation, having to choose to play Nancy one more time. And that, I think that was her moment. And so that part was always really cool to me, of her making that choice. I mean, I guess she didn't really have a choice, right? Like she's already in that world.
Yeah. It's a little bit of like a plot on rails to where she's not choosing a whole lot, you know?
Right. She's kind of forced into it. But, you know, the first time I saw this and then this rewatch, that switch into that world was always such a cool moment for me.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. Like I said, we get kind of, once they're in the dream world, it's a little, it's like a regular Friday the 13th. It's a regular sort of Nightmare on Elm Street kind of a ending, you know, and it works fine. It's not, you know, spectacular in what it does, because it's just kind of doing like what the original did and what some of the sequels do. And it's fine and it works well. And, you know, I do love the little match cut where she gets out of the, I was going to say, I love like the slide that she goes down and like the, and going through all of the trash to get down in there. I thought that that was really interesting.
Yeah. Just cause like, it looked really fun.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like the Goonies, where I'm like, oh, I would kind of like to go through all that, but also I would never want to try to get out of there. Right. Like, because they go down these tunnels and then they end up in this big pool of something. And then it's like, then what do you do?
Yeah, that's true. You're like stuck there. Yeah.
Right. But I thought that it was really, it was better in ways that I didn't remember. Like it talks about the industry in a lot more pointed ways than I remembered. And it had a lot of people, like, you know, there's a cameo from Lin Shaye in there, Bob Shaye's sister. And I was like, oh God, I love her. And the Insidious movies and 1, 2, 3. There was some pieces that I didn't love. Mainly I just wished that I liked the kid more. Like that was just such a thing that was really bugging me. And maybe it was just the day I was watching it, but for this time around, I was like, woo, man, is that irritating me? But I loved the meta parts of it. I would have loved to see Robert Englund do something and not just disappear, since he's sort of the face of the franchise. But I did enjoy it, and I was glad that you picked this one.
Yeah. And, you know, as we transition into Scream 4, something else I wanted to bring up was the use of harassing phone calls. How they play out in both of these films, not only these films, but the franchises too, and how they updated that for Scream 4, you know, like 2011 and what that looks like. I can't believe 2011 was 10 years ago. But yeah. So that's something else to kind of put a finger on, just because New Nightmare was so landline based versus Scream 4's cell phones and vlogging and social media. So that's also something, you know, I thought was really apparent during these rewatches.
Oh, the vlogging. We'll talk about the vlogging.
Oh, oof. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh boy.
But yeah, I like this one quite a bit. I think for me, it's probably my third favorite of the Nightmare movies. I like the first one, and then I like the third one quite a bit.
Not Freddy's Dead.
No, not. I'll let you watch all of the Freddy's Dead. You can leave me out of that one.
I guess I gotta watch that tonight.
Probably have to, just to wind, wind down.
Yeah. I mean, the one viewer, you know, I'm in charge of the residuals for all these people.
That's right. Robert's got to get his like 20 cents from you.
Exactly.
From renting it.
I got to, pay his bills.
You got to help. Every little bit helps. So anything else about New Nightmare before we transition to our second film?
No, let's transition into Scream 4.
Okay. Did you know that they asked Johnny Depp to, or they were going to ask Johnny Depp to reprise his role in New Nightmare?
Oh, really?
They were too intimidated to, and so they did not reach out to him. And in an interview, he said he would have absolutely done it.
Oh, gotcha. I must have read this wrong then, but I think I remember reading that. Wasn't he in like the funeral scene, or like, didn't he show up to the funeral?
I don't know.
An uncredited role. I'll have to double check that, but that's like the last thing I remember about him. But that's really, that makes sense, because by 94, he was definitely well known and a big time actor.
Big time. Big time. Well, let's talk about some big time. It is Scream 4 from 2011.
Here is my Woodsboro Massacre anniversary question. What is your favorite scary movie?
What's your favorite scary movie?
One generation's tragedy is the next one's a joke.
What is your favorite scary movie, man?
I'll show you.
This week marks the anniversary of the infamous Woodsboro murders. Local celebrity victim Sydney Prescott chose to return to her hometown.
Welcome home, Sydney. Watch the preview of coming events.
What do you want?
Who is this?
He's trying to do Ghostface.
I'm standing in the closet.
Liar.
Dewey! What's going on?
It is not public information.
It's all over the internet.
It is?
There's a killer out there patterning his murders after the original movie.
It's time for someone new to die.
The unexpected is the new cliche.
And virgins can die now.
Does that mean that I'm not gonna live as long as these two?
Clearly. To be the new version, the killer should be filming the murders.
Down! Down behind you!
Go ahead if you have the guts.
Not to implicate him. He can't kill Sydney. She's victim royalty.
Not true. Sid's expendable.
Point taken. Guaranteed third act main cast bloodbath.
Fingers crossed on some nudity for a change.
Time for your last question. Name the remake of the groundbreaking
Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, Dawn of the Dead, The Hills Have Eyes, Amityville Horror, Black Christmas, House of Wax, Hot Night, My Bloody Valentine. It's one of those, right?
None of the above.
I'll be right back.
I know this one. You're not supposed to say that, are you? You should have seen the look on your face.
And the IMDb plot synopsis for this film goes like this. It is much shorter, thankfully, but it says, after 10 years, Sydney Prescott returns to Woodsboro for her book tour of Out of Darkness, a self-help book about life before and after the murders. Dewey is now sheriff of the town with Deputy Judy Hicks. Since the year 2000, when the murders ended in Hollywood, Gail has got writer's block as Woodsboro has become boring. Sydney also reconnects with her cousin Jill and her aunt Kate, but Sydney's appearance also brings back the ghost of her past. Okay, so Scream 4, this is the only one that you saw in the theater. This is probably the only one that you're old enough to see in the theater, Regina.
Exactly. I didn't want to say it, you know, but but yes, that's exactly why. That's the one. God, I was in high school. And yeah, you're right. I think this was like one of the first ones after I must have been of age to watch them in theaters. And like I said, I watched the first one a very, very long time ago when I was really young. It was at a sleepover. And you know, back then sleepovers meant you watch scary movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they do that anymore, but that's what it meant for us.
They do that at our house. My kiddo was like, hey, you want to watch It Chapter One? And the kid's like, what?
Well, I've told you this before, but your kid is doing things right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's doing the most, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm a fan. I am a fan, and she's going to change the world one day.
Yeah, I'll tell her.
So I watched it at a sleepover when I was really young. I must have been 10 or 11. And it scared me, obviously. But I think the fun of it also was trying to figure out who the killer was. Mm. And that's what I love about the Scream franchise. The Scream franchise is also my favorite of the slasher genre, just because it did so much so differently than the others. And because I had, you know, the luck to have seen these at a much earlier age than the others, I think that had a lot to do with it as well. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, so I watched the first one, then, you know, cut to high school when I'm watching Scream 4 in theaters. And I hadn't seen 2 or 3 at that point, but just like the way they were able to talk so much about what was happening at that time, like we talked about with the vlogging, the social media, that desperate need for the 15 minutes of fame. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. And so that was sort of my first introduction to meta horror, like that self-reflexive look into what the horror genre means. And I fell in love with it. I had to immediately go back after I watched this in theaters to watch, you know, 1, 2, and 3 over again. Mm-hmm. And this is probably one of my favorite horror movies, like, of all time.
Wow. Okay. I like that. So I had seen this for the first time maybe a couple of years ago is all. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a thing where I liked and watched the first one a ton. The second one I liked okay. The third one I didn't really appreciate that much. And so when the fourth one came out after a little bit, I was like, I don't know. I think maybe I need a break from Scream 4 mm-hmm. because it comes out in 2011. It wasn't really a big slasher time. I don't remember it being a big like thing mm-hmm. for Scream at the time. I think it was definitely for me at 2011, that was the year before this podcast started, if you can believe that.
Oh, wow.
And so it was the thing where, you know, Rachel and I were going to see The Prestige and we're trying to be very like collegiate and talking about, cinema, capital C cinema sort of a thing, as opposed to horror movies and oh, how my tastes have changed. But, so watching it this time around, I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that long ago. I remember how it's very self-aware and it's very sort of aware that it's self-aware kind of a thing. Like it knows what mm-hmm. it's doing, where it's commenting on different things. And I really liked this. I really like this film. I really love the twist at the end. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some pieces where it's a big swing and it's sort of like things that don't, that just didn't pay off in like the everyday nature of our lives, like with the vlogging specifically, to where it's like, I get how it's been adapted into stories or Snapchat or TikTok or whatever. But just the sort of look of it, I was like, oh boy, woof. I don't love that. I do think that I was also asking some really important questions about this movie, about Dewey and his aim, about Hayden Panettiere and her choice of one of the Culkins. I was like, I don't understand this one bit. And so some of those things were a little suspect for me. But in general, I think that this is a lot of fun. This does really make me sort of look forward to the fifth film, which is coming out not too far in the future from when this will come out. Mm-hmm. So I am really looking forward to it. The fifth film to me feels like it just feels like what they did with Halloween to me, to where it's like, we're going to take it from the original and we're going to actually try to make it scary again and take some of the goof out of it is what it feels like, at least from the Whopping One trailer that I've seen. So we'll see, but I am looking forward to seeing what they do with that. But this one, I think that it's, I think almost all of the characters have something interesting that they're doing, like the way that they've developed. I don't love Deputy Judy, but the rest of them, I think, is like, I think it's interesting where Sydney is. I think it's interesting where Dewey and Gale are. Like, I think that a lot of that works out really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fun thing, like I mentioned before about the Scream movies, is you're almost trying to figure out the killer based on the rules, right, of the previous films and I guess just the genre in general. And knowing that this is meta horror from the beginning on this rewatch and going back and watching it, I felt like I was so engaged with it in a very different way. And I mean, we can start from the beginning, right? Even just the opening scenes with the sad movies coming on.
Absolutely.
Where they're talking about the other horror movies, right? And I think it was like Stab 7 with Anna Paquin, you know, like criticizing and critiquing meta horror. You know, I think she called it like postmodern meta shit or something like that. And she was like, sequels don't know when to stop. It's so predictable. And then that's when like Kristen Bell stabs her. And so even just that, like even just the opening scenes that play with the rules and how horror has gotten so predictable immediately made me fall in love with this movie all over again.
Yeah, I did love the fact that we get that we have the people at the very beginning, but that we have Anna Paquin and Kristen Bell watching it. I'm like, oh my God, Sookie. And we have Veronica Mars herself. Like, what is going on with this? Because I remember the first time watching that. And then we transitioned from that to Julie Taylor, to Amy Teagarden.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, because I loved Friday Night Lights. And so I'm like, oh my God, it's the coach's daughter. And then to have that be the real piece and to have her be sort of the,
the one that
actually dies in the real world of the movie was, that was really interesting. We have a ton of people that I felt like were going to be really big stars in this movie. And then I look at it and I'm like, geez, it's 10 years ago. And like, what happened to some of these people? Like, I don't know if Amy Teagarden chose not to act after this. I know that like Britt Robertson was going to be a big deal, at least I thought for a while when she was in Tomorrowland. And that was sort of like the big thing that she was going to, it was going to be like her as a thing. And then that movie didn't do super well.
Right. I'm going to say another controversial thing. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually like that movie.
Oh, I like Tomorrowland a lot. I went to the movie theater and watched that.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank God. No, well, I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, it was just so badly reviewed. I understand it, but it was just fun.
I'm also kind of a sucker, Regina, for anything that Damon Lindelof does. So I'm like a Damon Lindelof apologist. So any sort of thing that, and I also am attached to him because, the first show that my wife and I watched when we first started dating was Lost, and we watched it from beginning to end. And watching it from beginning to end makes a whole lot of sense to me. And so it was like a big drunken, tearful mess when that movie series ended. So anyway,
so there's a sentimental value attached to it for you.
Absolutely. And then there's people like, you know, people that have gone on to do things like Alison Brie or Hayden Panettiere or even like Emma Roberts, so where I don't think of this movie as the thing that launched them, but I always think and I see them and I'm like, oh yeah, this person's in it too. Oh geez, this person's also in this movie. And it's just kind of a whole bunch of, you know, people around this time that I thought was going to be like the next big star, or like even like a Lucy Hale early on in the film.
You know, I do have to say, I felt like this movie, after this movie came out, I saw Emma Roberts everywhere.
Oh, did you really? Okay.
And like, I think it was after this movie when she was on American Horror Story, and then like later on she was on Scream Queen. So I felt like this was the movie I saw, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, at that point everyone's like, that's Julia Roberts' niece. And then she started to just like go off on her own and do all these things. So I felt like, if anything, like she really blew up after this movie.
Oh, see, because I remember her from my kid watching Nancy Drew and watching that a lot. And then me seeing her in this. And then I think the next thing I saw her in was when she was in The Black Coat's Daughter.
Oh, I still haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, but yeah. And so that's interesting now because it's her and Kiernan Shipka. And we just got done watching all of Sabrina not too long ago. And so it's like, oh my God, it's the girl from American Horror Story and all this. And then it's got it's the girl from Sabrina. So the kiddo is all of a sudden very interested in watching that movie. So
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I knew her from Unfabulous, you know, that Nickelodeon show. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that's her. And she's the killer. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And she's 5 foot nothing. Like we said before, recording this, she's so short.
Put on boots. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. So anyway, yeah. So I think that this is, really good. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, so when Gail is, you know, she's bored, she's having a hard time, but I figured when she is writing, that's exactly what you do, right? Like you definitely begin without a treatment or an outline or anything. You just put chapter one and then you just start going. Like that's how you're supposed to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, you put chapter one in big lettering up at the top of your Word document. Like
24 point.
And then you just start typing, I don't know what the fuck I'm writing or whatever she said. That's exactly
you don't need character breakdowns or plot or anything like that. You just start writing.
You just do that. Yep. And then just watch your friend, you know, doing an interview on the TV and get jealous.
Oh boy. It's stuff like that to where it's like, I get that that Kevin Williamson knows better. So he's writing to a certain audience when he's writing stuff like that. But I'm like, oh man, come on. Like make the writing look a little more authentic than that.
Yeah.
You know,
sometimes it does. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it is possible that Gail's just not good. Like, that's a thing. Like, maybe she's just not good enough.
Yeah. You know, I do have to say, like, Gail is probably my favorite character in this movie.
Mm.
She does a lot and she's funny. When she's talking to the publicist, you know, I don't remember exactly where, but she's talking to Sydney's publicist and is just being badass and saying like, I still got it and stuff. Tarnished brand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just thought she was so funny. And that's the thing about this movie where it's full of humor as well. And it comes across really well in the characters. And, you know, part of me wonders if that's the actors, right? They've been with these characters for long that they know them sort of inside and out. But I also think that she's just such a great foil to Sydney as a character and has always been since the beginning that in this one to kind of like update her and upgrade her to someone who needs help, right? She needs to update her journalistic abilities to be able to keep up with this new brand of serial killer.
Yeah. And I do like how in this one, they are more willing to sort of work together.
Yeah.
Because as much as the first movie, most of the first three movies are Sidney Prescott movies, this one isn't as much. Like she's in it plenty, but it's not like you're in her sort of head as much. Where here in this one, it's more like, you know, she's on this book tour and of course she goes back and then she's got to deal with Ghostface coming back, but she's hanging out with Gail and they're going to this after school film club thing, which I told you I would never want to go to a party that was like that. That seems like a miserable time for me where everyone's screaming at the screen and all that. So we have moments with them but those are balanced out a lot more to where we have a lot of Emma Roberts's character. We have a lot of, I was thrown off by the Jill Roberts there. I was like, wait a minute, her name's actually Roberts.
It's the same last name,
but we have her and Kirby and their little group. And then also with Dewey and with Deputy Hicks, to where it's all split up a lot more than I remember the other films being. To where we're not with Sydney as much. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. I was like, okay, this is a new way to sort of pass the torch a little bit to where it's like, all right, it's not about Sydney anymore. It's about someone who's having to contend with living in Sydney's shadow. Mm-hmm. I really like that. Mm-hmm. I love the idea in almost every story about legacy, especially when it comes to horror movies. So I was really kind of in story-wise, especially when we're getting all of the sort of meta nods and we get the Facebook and Twitter comments, and I'm like, oh my God, both of those things were around 10 years ago. That makes me feel so old to where like they're making Twitter and Facebook jokes. But one of the things that I kind of wished Kevin Williamson would have done is that I feel like for me, there's so many references to other things to where I would have liked a little bit more of what I was sort of complaining about New Nightmare, to where I loved the meta stuff at the beginning, to where here it's like, it was so meta the entire time to where at some point I wanted it to sort of like cool it a little bit with all of the meta commentary. Like I love when Jill is, she has like her final speech and she's talking about how famous she's going to be and it's about her and it's not about Sydney anymore and all that kind of stuff. I like that, but it felt like to me that there was more sort of horror commentary around that I needed it to have. Like I wanted it to transition into being more about Jill's story, I guess.
I see. I can offer my perspective of that.
I'm waiting for you to tell me why I'm incorrect.
As we do in our messages.
That's right.
All the time. But I grew up in this period, right? Like I was in high school when this came out, and there was so much pressure to stay relevant in the social media world. At that time, it was a lot of, I guess it was at the tail end of MySpace, if I remember correctly, and Facebook was really coming to the forefront. But, you know, with the whole vlogging thing too, that was the period of time in my life where all of my friends had vlogs up. You know, YouTube was so huge. And if you weren't vlogging, you were weird. And why aren't you staying relevant? Why aren't you putting yourself out there in social media? So there was, I relate to that feeling of, you know, of that pressure to have to keep up with everybody else and the rest of the world. And I can understand someone like Jill, who is so desperate for fame, who needs to be famous for 15 minutes in a world where you can get famous for anything. You could record a dog vomiting and you'll get interviewed on GMA. Mm-hmm. So that aspect was, I thought, really well done because I went through the same sort of pressures. And because because the movie came out during the time when I was around that age with all those pressures building up, I related to it in a very different way. And so that 21st century meta horror commentary hit differently.
Yeah, I think that's probably the main disconnect, because I sort of feel like I see this and I'm like, I'm a personality type 4, which if anyone out that's listening does Enneagrams, it's like the person that always thinks something is wrong. is what that personality type is. And it's also the one that does not want attention ever. And so the idea of all of this, like being forced to, or feeling like you're forced to, or having pressure to always update people and always do this, that, and the other thing. Like, I feel like I just don't have that. And maybe it's because of the age that I am, or maybe it's just because of my personality type, to where I watch all of the people that are doing this. And I think like, ooh, God, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that. Like, I'm glad I don't give a shit what people think, sort of a thing, right? Like I'm glad that that's my personality type, as opposed to seeing it and identifying with it, like going, oh, this person's a little bit like me, or this person's like, that's how I also would have handled it, or whatever. I think that that's where that disconnect comes in for me.
That makes sense. And I wonder if there was another horror, like a meta horror movie done today, I wonder how differently that would hit as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I still teach and I'm teaching Gen Z, and they have a very different relationship to social media and technology that even I do, which is probably very different from your relationship to social media and technology. And so, yeah, I'm curious to see how that would land for today's audience and having to be famous on TikTok and other stuff that I don't know at all and I can't keep up with
the stuff now, that makes Regina feel old.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me? Every day they're talking about some other thing. And I'm like, wow, I'm really old. I mean, most of my students now have been, they were born after 9/11 and they're learning it as history now. And that blows my mind.
Well, I mean, tell me about it. I like, you know, my kiddo was definitely, she was born 7 years after 9/11.
Oh, wow.
But I was like, oh yeah, I was in college during 9/11 and I remember this, this, this. And I remember some of the classes shut down, but mine didn't because I was in Spanish class and the guy was from the Basque country in Spain and was like, yeah, this sort of thing happens. What's the big deal? Let's get on with our lesson. God. And we're like, what? No, this doesn't happen here. And he's like, really? It doesn't happen here? I'm like, wow. No. And so he just had sort of no like context. He's like, yeah, right. It's just a bombing. Like what's going on? What's everyone's problem?
Oh,
so it was just a whole different sort of experience. But yeah, it's having my kiddo around is definitely one that she excels in making me feel old.
Yeah. And I'm getting to that point too, where, you know, like I never thought I would be the one who's like, you know, turn that music off or what are you talking about? But I'm getting there and it's really scaring me.
Yeah. One of the things I wrote down here in the notes, and this is about this goes into the Jenny Randall and the Jill Roberts and the boyfriend that, you know, and all this kind of stuff where it has the very similar kind of, we're going to plant it on somebody else and they're going to be the killer and that kind of thing. But I put in here, I was like, man, high school relationships are just the dumbest shit, especially in movie form. Like they're just the dumbest.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, very much like New Nightmare, where they had a lot of callbacks to the original. There were a lot of callbacks to the original here, which I thought was cool. Like the creepy boyfriend, because, you know, at the end of Scream 1, it was the boyfriend who turned out to be one of the killers. Mm-hmm. And so they did such a good job, like setting up that creepy boyfriend trope, him sneaking into Jill's room through the window, you know, stuff like that, that I thought was really well done and almost like a, you know, a nod to the original.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I didn't love as much, and I think that it was because I was just not believing the Rory Culkin of it. but it's that moment where it's him and Kirby and then the boyfriend character and then Jill, and they're all kind of doing this like musical chair sort of thing. Where it's like one of them will go upstairs, the other one says they're going upstairs, and then they come back, and then they go around the house, and all this. And I was like, what is even happening? Like, what? Like, if I tried to recreate their steps, like, what are they actually doing in the scene? Like, I just think that has to be something that was found on the day, because I can't imagine writing like, then they leave, then they come back, and then they leave, and then they come back. And it's like so much business for it just seemed like for, you know, they were getting to the whole Kirby and Culkin sort of them getting together, but not getting together. And then her passing the test and then a fake out with him and all that kind of thing.
But it still, it makes sense. And it's probably because I've watched it so many times, but like, you know, from a logical perspective, right? Jill has to go upstairs first. I don't want to go into the whole, you know, I won't like retrace every step, but like the gist of it is she needs to go upstairs first to quote unquote look for her phone, right? Mm-hmm. And that sort of lures Trevor up there so she can do away with him and then make him seem like he's Ghostface. Mm-hmm. And then she comes down, obviously Trevor's not there, and Kirby's like, where do you go? He went upstairs. And she's like, oh, I didn't see him up there. You know, meanwhile, we know what she did with him. Mm-hmm. And then that sets up the suspicions there. And then, you know, and then that sort of leads into all the rest of it. But it makes sense to me, Eric, like why they had to do that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And it's probably just because I'm such a fan that I'm like, this movie can do no wrong.
Right.
That's probably, you know, 90% of it.
So. Are you, I would love to hear your defense of Deputy Hicks.
Oh my God. I love Deputy Hicks.
So I watch Marlee Shelton and I'm like, she's got like the sort of look to where I'm like, I feel like I know this person. And I look at her IMDb and I'm like, well, I don't think I've seen her in anything else. Like I've seen the Death Proof and Planet Terror films, but I don't remember her from those movies. Uh-huh. And then I'm kind of like looking around and I'm like, no, I haven't seen this. I didn't see that. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know that I really know her from anything. I did notice that she is in the new movie.
Yeah. One of my friends was just telling me that, like, the night I was watching it, I was like, oh, hell yes. I am so down.
Yeah. So those are the four that are returning, I guess.
Oh, awesome.
Is the main three and then her. So anyway, I was like, well, she looks familiar. Like, she's so obviously in love with Dewey. And I was like, what? Why is everyone so infatuated with David Arquette? Like, I just never.
You're not, Eric?
I was like, I just never understood old Dewey, I guess. Deputy Doofus or whatever it was that Gail calls him. And so then she has her iconic line at the end with the bulletproof vest.
And so I'm just like,
I don't know. I felt like that was too cute for me, but it obviously landed for you, but I was like, I don't know what they're going for with this one.
She is such a great character in this film. And I will die on this mountain.
I love that I keep picking at it and you're like, no.
I know. This is how our relationship has evolved since our first talk, where I just shut you down now.
I like it.
And part of it is definitely during my first watch of this ever. Because again, like I said, the fun of the Scream movies is like trying to figure out the killer. So when I watched this for the first time, you know, not really knowing who the killer was, that was the fun thing. Cause I think I went to like a matinee in the middle of the school day. Don't tell my mom, with someone I was dating at that time. We just like skipped school to go watch this movie.
How dare you, Regina?
I know. And you know what? I still graduated with all A's, so it's okay. But you know, we had the whole theater to ourselves too. So it was really fun to just be able to like talk to each other and try to figure out like, oh no, I think that's the killer because blah, blah, blah. Or it has to be Deputy Judy because she's creepy looking.
Yeah, she has a very creepy scene where she's coming after, it seems like, Sydney, and she's like, oh, you don't remember me and all that. Like, I thought that scene was brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. And just the way they lit her and her eyes are wide and stuff like that. But you know, like even the other Scream movies, right? Like 2 and 3, where you're trying to figure out who the killer is. Like in 3, I remember they played up Emily Mortimer's character really well, because I was so convinced she was the killer the entire time. Mm-hmm. And you know, so something like that, where you're just like so invested in trying to figure this out along with the characters. And from the beginning, Judy was somebody I just loved. Because she is so in love with Dewey. Mm-hmm. She takes her job so seriously and she thinks she's, you know, really saving the day when she's really not. And to me, she was just such a fun character. I feel like she must have had so much fun in the role as well. And then for her to come out at the end, right, and say that iconic line just to wrap it up, I was like, wow, this is such a good character that they built.
So that the vest saving her chest or whatever, that's more iconic than you're not cheating on your wife if you eat my lemon squares.
Oh, yes, it is. Okay. It is way more iconic. Yeah, that's a good one, too, though.
Uh-huh.
I love Gail's line when she's like, they taste like ass. And then Dewey has to come out and say, like, they don't. They really don't.
Mm-hmm. It is a pretty fun little dynamic. I just don't understand why Dewey's such this heartthrob. Especially because he's not very good at his job.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, remember the first one when he's like a trainee or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then now he's like running the town. It's like, I don't know if I would place my trust in him. But
yeah, really. Okay. I do like how we have the evolution of his limp that goes away in this one, which, right. which they sort of explain away in the trivia by like physical therapy, I think is what they said.
Oh, really?
I think that's what they said in the trivia for Scream 4. But then if you look at the trailer for the next one, like he is definitely not well, Dewey. And so he's got kind of like the Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween, where like things have all gone bad. Nobody's taking him seriously, kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, this will be interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I am looking forward to that as much as I did like Scream 4. I'm maybe not head over heels like Regina, but I did think it was fine.
Yeah, it's a fun one, you know, and just like the two generations of media too, right? Like it really acknowledges the advancement of technology that has happened since the first one, or even just with New Nightmare. And it was fun, like the cops dissecting the rules of horror movies too, like while they're on detail.
with Anthony Anderson.
And just the fact that, you know, Gail says at the end, you do a remake to outdo the original.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say they outdid the original, but they got pretty close.
Yeah. And the first one, I think, always holds a special place in my heart because it's for me, the first time where you're talking about Final Girls and Scream Queens and you're referencing things that I had seen at the time. And I'm like, holy shit, like I've seen this too, Jamie Kennedy. Like, I know what you're talking about. And and those were people that I got to see after that movie become big things for a little while and then sort of fade and get themselves in trouble and all that sort of thing. To where when I watch Scream 4, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that young person. They're still really young, right? And then I look and I'm like, oh Jesus, they should have already had a career by now. You know, and it's like, oh, I wonder if they retired or something, you know.
So none of the kids in this one bothered you as much as the villain in Nightmare?
No, I didn't have any problems with any of the actors here. I think that you know, I think that for me, the most effective kill is the actor that I had sort of the most problems with. It was with the next door neighbor at the beginning where they're
They're
talking about the wrong closet. And I'm like, ooh, that is a really smart little twist. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that was cool. And when Sydney goes over there and like sees her and you see her intestines just out on the bed.
Gross.
Oh my gosh. And just the blood-soaked walls. I was like, holy crap, they really played that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's some of the stuff, like when I watch, like something that my wife and I finished not too long ago was like Hannibal. To where like when things happen in there, you're like, oh my God, gross. And so I liked
not the show, right?
No, the show.
Oh, the show, okay. Yeah.
And so when we watch that and we're like, wow, this looks disgusting when people are getting killed. And then in something like this particular scene where there's blood all over the place, I'm like, holy shit, that person must have been really flinging the blood around to get it all over like that.
Exactly.
Like, that's crazy.
Exactly. It's like so tossing the body back and forth.
I was like, man, that poor girl really got killed.
Yeah. That was a brutal scene. Yeah. And just the fact that Ghostface like shows them as well, right? Like he breaks the window and like puts her body over the edge to like almost taunt them.
Yeah, it's just like a display, like I'm back kind of a thing.
Exactly.
Yikes. So yeah, enjoyed this one. Didn't love it as much as Regina, obviously, if people were listening. I'm looking at my notes here. I think that I mentioned pretty much everything, Dora. I like I said, I would have loved it if it just eased off just a bit of the comments once the plot really sort of got to the third act and made it more about Jill and sort of her pathos, because that was the piece that really hit the hardest for me, to where I was like, holy shit, like she is really messed up. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Ariel's favorite part, which she's brought up to me several times, which is Jill stabbing herself and flinging herself at the wall.
God, yeah.
Which is maybe a thing that I stole, which Regina will be reading soon.
Oh, perfect. I can't wait to get to that. Then.
Yeah. And you're like, hey, you stole that exactly from Scream 4. I was like, yes, I did.
Well, so, I have this thing where, like, you know, when I see people get stabbed in movies and or shot or anything, like I feel like I'm getting shot as well or stabbed. Oh, so when I watched that, it was such an uncomfortable just thing to watch, because I almost felt like I was getting stabbed in the shoulder, and like having to inflict that pain onto yourself, like how ridiculously, you know, just, oh, like how ridiculously overboard are you to have to do that to yourself? And yeah, just that, oh God, like I have it in my head now, and I'm like, no one can see this, but I'm like grabbing my shoulder because it hurts now.
Well, it's interesting because I like as much as a problem as I have with Rory Culkin in what he's asked to do in this film, I do really like the scene where it's like the whole Stu stuff in the first film, where he's having to psych himself up to get stabbed. And much like that first film, he's sort of the patsy and gets stabbed too much and is killed. And And so I really like that, to where you get the moment where you're like, all right, well, if we're going to fake this, let's do it. And I'm going to stab you now. And you're just like, oh shit. I was not looking forward to this part.
Trust them. Yeah. You just trust the person to, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. If you were setting up this whole elaborate plan to get famous and kill a bunch of people, and then you trust them as well to not kill you. I don't know.
Just, yeah. I would rather be Jill and run into the knife is what I would rather do. I would rather do that. I would not like say, hey, Regina, here's this knife. Go ahead and stab me. I'll trust that you won't get me.
Oh my God.
I'd rather put it in my own hands.
I have to say, I would not. I'd rather be Rory Culkin, because I can't stab myself. I can't do it. I would not do it. No.
Okay.
So in that case, no, I would definitely just have you stab me.
Well, and this is why we're different.
Yeah, exactly. This is why this friendship works.
That's right. That's the key thing. Mm-hmm. I would stab myself and you would have me stab you. So that's what we've learned.
Exactly.
I do like it. All right. Well, anything else about Scream 4 or New Nightmare? We didn't mention too much the whole vlog stuff. Did you ever have a Google Glass or ever want to carry around a camera on your face all the time?
Absolutely not. When all my friends were getting into vlogging, I was not. And I thought, you all are ridiculous. I can't imagine having a camera in my face 24 hours a day. Some of my friends vlog themselves like getting ready for bed and stuff. And I was like, no one cares. Like, you have, you know, 2 followers on YouTube. And I just never understood that. And I think I'm very much like you in that I don't like attention. Like, I hate it so much. And it's probably also why I'm a writer. Like, I would much rather stay behind the scenes than in front of it. And so for this movie, you know, something I did want to bring up quickly is the phone calls, right? Because the harassing phone calls in Nightmare, but also Scream, and how much the plot and how much of the killer is reliant on people picking up their phones, which would not happen today.
That is not me. You better text me and tell me you're calling me.
Yeah, exactly. And I will not pick up the phone unless you leave a voicemail. Then I'll know it's something important. But
well, I don't know. I mean, if people really want to get a hold of you, all they have to do is find any of your threads and then ask for your number. I think that's a pretty good, pretty good strategy, which I saw a while ago.
Yeah. I feel like there's, oh my God, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. That was weird. a little scary, to be honest with you. I was like, that's not what I was asking for.
Yeah, to be a woman on the internet. Unbelievable. Oh, it's just never ending.
No. And man, if I could show you just one day's worth of DMs.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Gross.
But yeah, going back to what I was talking about with, you know, in this day and age with caller ID, Google, everything being on the internet is just, I just don't trust anybody. And like, I will not be picking up calls. Maybe if it's like an LA number, just because, you know, you never know. But most of the time it's my dentist.
It could be some secret producer out there that's trying to green light stuff and you're missing it. And they don't believe in voicemail.
That's the hope, but that's just not going to be reality. You know, everybody emails, or, you know, stuff will come in other ways, or people will text. I mean, like, I've gotten texts now for come and be on our survey for this new movie. And it's like, how did you even get my number? Like, I don't understand. So I just feel like I wonder how like Scream 5 is going to do that.
Yeah. Let's speculate about that, because so in the trailer, you've seen the automatic unlocking and locking doors, which I thought was smart.
Yeah.
Because we did get a little bit of that in New Nightmare as well, with the whole like locking her door, your door's unlocked, all that kind of stuff. To where I was like, oh, they are really sort of doing like a preface as to how he's going to do Scream. And then obviously we had the same sort of thing where they're always talking about the doors, and we have the sort of Ghostface app that alters the voice.
Oh yeah.
And then in this one, yeah, it'll be interesting, because it does look like everyone's got smartphones, so the locks can be controlled or manipulated that way. We had the landline where the lady was saying, you know, she was texting her saying, you know, why are you calling me or whatever.
I gotta rewatch that trailer. I think a good almost a precursor is that new Chucky movie, because they were able to update Chucky as a doll to adjust to, you know, whatever we're dealing with in technology. So I feel like that is almost like that's sort of the base that I'm going off of going into Scream 5, and just to see how they're going to elevate that to a whole new level, if they do at all.
Sure. Do you have any experience with the Scream TV show?
No. So that's the one thing I have not seen yet.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of that either. I feel like I'm too old to be watching anything on MTV.
Yeah. And I mean, with like Scream Queens as well, I didn't watch any of that.
Yeah, but I feel like if anything came to Shudder, if it came to Shudder, maybe I'd watch it. But it's like it's on MTV. I think I'm too old.
Yeah, and it's weird for me to say that as well. Like I feel way too old for that too.
What about the new Chucky series? Have you seen any of that yet?
I have not seen any of that yet. Yeah, but it is on my list, and I'm excited to watch it. I love the Chucky series.
Yeah, I liked it. From what I've seen about it, because I watched a thing on Shudder talking about it was with Don Mancini, just talking about the evolution of the character and talking about having it be centered on a young out 14-year-old who's got Chucky as kind of like a support system from being bullied for being gay and all this kind of stuff. And
is this Behind the Monsters?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one. I just watched that one this morning too.
Yeah. And so so it was interesting hearing him talking about the evolution of the series. So
if people
haven't checked that out, they definitely should.
Yeah. And that's the really cool thing about all of these franchises, where they started in, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then now they're being updated for the modern audience. And that's the really cool thing about horror too, is you can upgrade it to be a commentary on what's happening today. So if you go back and watch stuff like the original Nightmare or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or even the first Scream, it says so much about what was going on at that time. And then watching something like, I'm sure, the new Chucky series and Scream 5 that's going to come out soon, they say so much about what's happening now. And so to have the franchise and these characters evolve with the times is such a cool thing to experience as a horror fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you always have an opportunity for one of those in the series to be like the one, to be the Scream 4 for Regina, right? It's like, to where if my kid has only seen the original Scream and she's seen it a lot, the other day I was not even at home, and I come home and I walk into the living room and my wife and my kid are watching Scream. And I said, what are you guys watching this for? And she's like, oh, Anna just wanted to.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. I was like, have you seen any of the sequels? She's like, no, not yet. All right.
She probably will at some point.
Yeah, she will. She's seen the trailer for 5 and she thinks it looks really interesting. So I told her we'll have to start watching some of the sequels soon.
Yeah, once she gets to Scream 4, definitely let her know this is like one of my favorite of all time.
Yeah, I'll say no pressure. Regina says that you have to like this one.
Oh my gosh, she's going to hate me.
Yeah, I'll tell her that specifically. And she'll just, I mean, she's got her 13-year-old attitude, so she'll just be like, oh, whatever. So,
yeah.
All right, well, anything else that we haven't mentioned, Regina, before I let you go?
No, I think we covered everything. This was a cool deep dive into the genre, and yeah, thank you for having me back on to provide this space.
Absolutely. So if people have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you could email me at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod, or you can follow me over there. I'm @EricWilliams79, which maybe gives you a hint as to how old I actually am. We also have an Instagram account. Just search for Plain Label Podcast and you'll find us over there. If you wanted to help out the show, you could check out our show notes, or you'll find the link to our Amazon wish list. I do want to thank Regina for coming on once again, bringing this theme and these films to me. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do that?
I'm on Twitter @ReginaKimWrites.
And she loves direct messages. about any topic.
Oh my God, Eric. Maybe if you're a creepy man, real. Stay out of it.
Yeah, but... not for real. If you're if you're my age or older, just leave Regina alone for Pete's sake.
Please. If you're a friend, welcome in. But that's right. If you're, but no one's gonna say I'm a creepy man, I should stay out of her DMs, you know?
I wouldn't put it past some people to say that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But if they want to say, hey, I also like Scream 4, just maybe at her instead of trying to DM.
If you're
her.
Going to talk about Scream 4, you are welcome in my DMs at any point.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you for listening. And you can join me next week as returning guest Andrew Shaw pops on over to begin a discussion of occult horror with the original The Wicker Man and Drag Me to Hell.